Welcome to In and Out of Character, a role players podcast, where I, your host, Mr. Island, talk to role players all over the world about all sorts of topics relating to roleplay. Most of the time, I just like to ask people how they got into the hobby, but sometimes we talk about like virtual reality roleplaying, sometimes we talk about MMO roleplaying, sometimes we talk about tabletop roleplaying. It all just sort of kind of comes and goes with the conversation. I wanted to apologize for not releasing an episode last week, guys. I am very sorry about that. I had an episode prepared, but for some odd reason, when I went to go upload it, the whole file was mute. I have no idea what happened. I started working with plugins and stuff like that, and at some point during the process, it just made everything super quiet, and I could not fix it, so I had to redo the whole thing. I tried to go back to the original files to just work with it before the expert, but no matter what I did, I don't know what I did, I goofed it and it just was muted, so I had to rework it and so on. With that said, I do have a bit of bad news. I'm going to be going back to one episode a week for right now. I will get back to it as soon as I can. I hate to keep using this as an excuse, but being a single parent and working this factory, you know, the 7 a.m. to the 7 p.m. job leaves me with very little time, and when mishaps like this happen, it can kind of push everything back, and I don't want to do that to the guests who are coming on the show. So until I can get better at the plugins, until I can get better at performing and getting used to quality over quantity, I am going to just release an episode every Monday. That said, as soon as I can get back to it, I do plan on doing the two episodes a week again, and I'm going to use this opportunity to get back into video content, start doing that MMO role-playing video content that I've always been talking about, and the other such things. I have a few other projects coming along. If you want to know about them, you can join me on the Discord. I'll be happy to talk about it. But with that said, let's go ahead and get into it. Thank you guys so much for your patience, and enjoy the show. How did you get started in role-playing?
When I was probably 15-ish, I want to say either in my last year of middle school, my first year of high school, I was in the band at the school, the band program at the school, and I met John, one of my friends now, and at some point I got invited over to his house where I met his brother, Michael, who ended up DMing a campaign for John, myself, and Nicole. And we did a run of The Curse of Strahd. And that was my first ever time playing D&D, and my first time role-playing. Or at least role-playing so far as having an actual structured, like, story to imagine myself as a character in. I and many others probably started somewhere in like a yard with their cousins.
Playing pretend,
playing the occasional superhero or whatnot.
You won't believe how many people actually tell me that they first started off in like chat rooms. Like that's where their first role-playing experience was.
I'm sure that was for a lot of people, but I think that's probably more common in like people who would be about maybe in their like early 30s nowadays, because like chat rooms almost died out as quickly as they got started.
Yeah, like, it was quite a long time ago. Another one of my guests who was just on earlier today, we were talking about how they got started in the chat rooms as well. Like just, and we're all old people now.
You're only old once you're 30. And then you're middle-aged. No. 30 exactly is old, and then 30 up is middle-aged.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then you've got dinosaur, which is anything 50 plus.
All right, I'm working my way to a dinosaur. I'm a dinosaur.
It's a fun time.
Yeah, so you like D&D, you play D&D. Have you played a lot of D&D since?
Well, that's a great question. Quantifying what a lot of D&D is, I've been part of several other campaigns. Dude, honestly, if you had the time, I have breath. I can tell you about all of them. But to not talk your ear off the whole time, I've played the Strahd campaign that I just told you about.
Yeah.
I played a John actually tried to DM the Descent to Avernus campaign for myself and his brother, but that one always fell through because either of scheduling or the fact that... Have you ever played the Descent to Avernus campaign?
No, I have not.
Okay. It's one of, like, the five most well-known. Those are the, like... There's Curse of Strahd, Descent to Avernus, Waterdeep, Dungeon of the Mad Mage. They're, like, a bunch of, like, the pre-built campaigns, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Descent to Avernus has you start off entering Baldur's Gate, talking to a Flaming Fist who tells you about a mission you need to do. And the first thing they send you to do is to find an elf, or is to find somebody at the Elf Song Tavern. And as soon as you finish talking to that person, like, eight bandits and a bandit captain bust in the door. The bandit captain has a plus, like, 7 or 8 to hit and has multi-attack. The party is level 1 at this point, so for anything less than, like, a 5 to 6 person party, this first encounter is nearly unwinnable.
Yeah, like, I was about to say, like, all that for first levels.
So, that one gave us trouble almost every time. One time we were just like, well, we know what's... One time we metagamed super hard. We're like, we know what's happening. We know what's going to go down. We're going to wait on these stairs. And when they come up the stairs, we're going to kick them into each other.
I was about to ask, like, how they kind of got out of that. Because, like, I can imagine burning the building on top of them and running away, but...
Oh, they had a ship in the shipyard not too far from the tavern that at that point we were like, holy crap. This is around the time I think Thor Ragnarok came out, so we full pulled the get help bit on trying to get onto the boat to take their boat.
So do you play, has it just strictly been D&D? Have you tried other, like, systems?
Well, at one point, Jacob DM'd a game of Pathfinder, but Pathfinder soon, because, like, he has played Pathfinder and D&D.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was trying to get us and a group of our coworkers at the time to play Pathfinder. And to be fair, Pathfinder is certainly an interesting, And I can see why a lot of people have a lot of fun with it. There's a lot. It's mm-hmm. not one of the, it's not, D&D is way easier to drop into.
Oh yeah.
Like, you drop in level 1 D&D, you'll get the hang of it by the time you hit level 5. You drop into level 1 Pathfinder, you are going to be scratching and clawing and scratching and clawing until you finally, like, until something clicks.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Mind you, Pathfinder, in case you didn't know, it was basically D&D 3.75. So basically 3.5 came out, and everyone loved that. And then 4.0 came out, and everyone hated that because they were used to 3.5, and 4.0 changed it up almost fucking completely.
And yeah, I love the idea that people just, like, they look at something that's different and they go, I hate that.
Yeah, well, they're just so used to the old system, and with the whole, like, with the entirety of the new drastic changes to 4.0, it kind of put them off for a while. So a lot of people just played 3.5 for a very long time, and then Pathfinder came out with basically updated rules and stuff like that, and then everybody who was obsessed with 3.5 just went over to Pathfinder.
But yeah, we played, he made a homebrew Warhammer-based campaign for us to play through, mm-hmm. and that was pretty fun. That was a lot of fun. We did eventually, at some point, we transferred from Pathfinder, which was a system none of the rest of us were aware of or comfortable with, so we switched to 5e because we had to take a quick, like, long-time break because Jacob's computer, which is what he was using to write the campaign... I don't remember if it... his internet bricked, and he couldn't use his laptop to access any of the files because they were online, so we had to take a break, so we used that break to transfer to 5e.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I hate when that happens.
Hey, you know, sometimes it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
But after that, when we, I think it was actually around the time we actually might have, I think we swapped to 5e before his internet bricked. And then we stopped doing that campaign because his internet bricked. And by the time he had internet, that whole group, I won't say fell apart, because their circumstances changed. One of us left to do a different job. One of us not only left to do a different job, but started a relationship and had to start doing like relationship things. And so mm-hmm. he fell out of the time frame we were in. And then the rest of us, we picked up a different campaign, the Descent to Avernus campaign. Actually, Jacob ran it for us, and that was a lot of fun. That's actually where I really, when I first played D&D, when I played Curse of Strahd, I was hardly role-playing. I was more imagining myself doing things and acting a scenario, but less acting a scenario, more just like sort of like Baldur's Gate, where you're not like, you're not your character. You're somebody controlling a character doing things most of the time. Like a lot of people that aren't like big role players, when they play something like Baldur's Gate, they don't imagine themselves as that character in that scenario. They just are like, this is my character. I made him throw a rock at a goblin that's eating poop. And that's just that's it for them. And that's how I really started playing D&D. But when I played this Descent to Avernus campaign, and technically this started a little bit when I was playing in the Warhammer campaign Jacob was doing, was like I started going, well, this is what I want this character to sort of be. And so I'm going to act in a way I think that character would act. It started... The Warhammer Kane wasn't a complete transition, but it was the start of a transition from I'm going to do what I would want to do to I'm going to make a character and I'm going to make decisions I think that character would make. So when we played Descent to Avernus, I had a background. I was playing, I was like a 7-foot, 8-foot tall Warforged paladin. But like I was undercover at the at a mansion of people who pretended to be vampires. So I was, I think part of the funny, I think the bit with the character was, I was undercover as a butler, but I was also undercover as like a human butler.
As a Warforged, yeah.
The character's name was Titan Hammerfall or something along those lines, but like the butler name was Hugh Manning because he's a human man.
My last Warforged, right, was a druid. It was a transformer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was so silly. I love the idea. If you ever want to have a fun time, just play a Warforged druid. And I don't know, I giggle every single time I got to change shape as the Warforged. Dude.
You're so right.
I would bring
so cool.
I'd bring transformers and I would just like flip them. Oh god, I was such a nerd.
Oh god, that's such a good bit though. Just like I'm not just druid. I'm a transformer, and you just fucking church.
It's a lot of fun. You can come up with a lot of funny archetypes in
dude, D&D. Being a Warforged gives you so much range to do silly, goofy nonsense.
There was a... You can ask Jacob about this one. So there was a time Jacob and I... Jacob was running a campaign for me and a few other people. And I was playing a Warforged again, right? We got into this room that had this whirlpool that was, like, sucking everybody in. But a Warforged, it was resistant to water, right? Like, I took half damage from it. And so my Warforged went down to this crack where this whirlpool was coming, and I told Jacob, I'm gonna punch the floor. And then Jacob looks at the book and says, what's the DC rating of the floor?
It's good.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing about that. It was just silly because it was like one of those moments where it's like, oh my god, yeah, I'm just punching the floor. Why am I asking? Are there any systems where like that you want to try?
Daggerheart, to answer your question. I have been kind of itching to play Daggerheart. Because most of the time I play D&D, I sometimes feel disengaged when I'm having to wait my turn in combat, and I don't feel as well doing... It just feels weird. There's a lot of disconnect with doing non-combat like roleplay.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like forcing myself into what I feel Daggerheart is more inept to. Adept at.
Mm-hmm.
Is doing more roleplay based actions with their 2d12 system rather than a d20 system. Because with the 2d12 system, as I've had it explained to me, because you have your hope die and your fear die, you can roll, you can still succeed at a roll, but still like sort of fail. Mm-hmm. With like, if you roll with fear, you kind of like, you do what you wanted, but there was some like unintended consequence or something.
Oh, interesting.
But I also feel like with that, with there being less focus on like, here are your 6 stats and here are your proficiencies. And if you don't have a good stat and a good proficiency, that kind of like locks your character out of making certain decisions. Like everybody is multifaceted, but like when you roll for stats, you kind of run the risk of not being multifaceted, or at least not being multifaceted in a way I like to see a lot of characters. But I also understand that you can't just have 20s across the board, because then you get to anything and you're still like, my character does it all. No need for other party members. I can sit here and roll history and insight and arcana and perception and medicine, and I can just do everything. But like that's, you know, that's where you get the trade-off a lot of the times. It's like sometimes your character is good at a bunch of things, and sometimes your character is just kind of good at making a tent sometimes.
I have to disagree on one thing. My monk did not have a problem that they could not punch. History doesn't fucking matter. Punch it. Lore check, punch it.
Lore check, punch that guy. That guy just asked me if I knew things, punch him in the face.
Please, absolutely.
I have recently picked up Warhammer's Rogue Trader. It's free on Xbox right now for mm-hmm. Game Pass. So me and Drew, a buddy of mine, picked it up, and we're just having a blast. To be fair, the first boss fight is the first... There's like, leading up to the first boss fight, there are a bunch of fights, and none of them really feel very challenging. A lot of it is like teaching you mechanics, introducing enemy types, telling you how to do stuff, getting you leveled, and then the first boss fight doesn't tell you a fucking thing other than that the boss slowly gets stronger. But what it doesn't tell you is that the boss, if you damage it enough, takes one of the smaller enemies, eats it, regains health, gains speed, gains power, and then whoops. So the first fight, I was like, I didn't even know this was going to be a thing. So the first time we did the fight, I killed like 4 out of the 6 tiny enemies. And because 2 of them were like in a weird spot that I couldn't immediately get to, we just kind of ignored them. And then Drew did like 30 damage to the boss, and it said, it didn't even have to be close to them. It just, they evaporated and the boss did all the things.
You see, Warhammer is one of those settings, right? Like, I like the lore to an extent. Sometimes it's a little too grimdark for me, but I don't mind the war. I like a lot of the games I play of them, like video games, but like I just don't have an interest in playing the war game
tabletop. I understand. The tabletop Warhammer like main game is not for everybody. And sometimes it's not even for the people who it's supposed to be for. Like right now, 10th edition is so weird to me right now, because like I can see what I want to do with my army, but because I don't have like a couple of resources, like I want to ride a bunch of tanks into battle. But the issue with that is I can certainly kill my opponent's army, but not before they score a bunch of points and I lose the game. Or I can run a bunch of units that are good at scoring points and then a couple units that are good at doing what I want to do. But then I'm sacrificing what I want to do to score points.
Yeah. It seems like it seems like something I could enjoy, possibly, but like, oh, there's just a lot to learn. And man, I look at it every single time. Everyone's like, play this game with me. I'm like, oh, God, hey, rules.
Man, if you wanted to, and I'm not saying you got to, this is just my suggestion. If you wanted to get into Warhammer and you cared less about what looks the coolest and more about, I want to play this game without having to learn a whole lot. The Adeptus Custodes are one of the simplest armies in the game, and they're pretty easy to get behind. You just you pick a bunch of dudes, they've all got 4+ invuls, you throw them up the board and you hit things. Now, of course, that's an oversimplification, really, but
right, yeah. I do have some units. I just never like I like collecting them more for
artistic painting. Purposes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Because, you know, I'm into that shit. But Warhammer is one of those things where, like, if they took the war game and, like made a role-playing system using the war game, if that makes sense, then I would probably be, like, way more into it.
That's a sort of what Rogue Trader feels like. Because, like, they use wounds, damage... Rogue Trader uses a D100 system for its stat rolls, and mm-hmm. it's so odd. Like, I don't have a handle on it just yet, but, like, it's just, like, here's a lore check. You have a 95% bonus to this. And I'm like, but I also have a 40% bonus from my stat block. And it's like, yeah, you have a 135% chance of succeeding. And I'm like, I don't... Why? Why do I have that?
Yeah, I think I got it through Humble Bundle recently. I should double check, but I'm pretty sure I got it actually.
Oh, it's so much fun though. I may not understand what's happening like 100% of the time, but like, God, is it so cool?
You know what? It's a multiplayer game, right?
Yes. It's not cross-platform, I don't think, but it is multiplayer. So if you have it on Steam, I'm pretty sure you'd be able to like play it with Jacob and potentially Jax. I think Jax has it on Steam.
Well, actually, I was gonna say because I have some friends I'm gonna be doing some content with, and I was like, you know, Rogue Trader might be actually one of those things I put on that list.
Dude, one of the first characters you get introduced to in Rogue Trader is the Rogue Trader before you, Theodora von Valencia. So cool. And her arch militant Mort has a Melta gun, and it's so much fun to look at.
I will have to look at that because I have no idea what you just said. I have no idea what a Melta gun is.
Well, I'll leave you to it. You'll figure out. Look, if you do decide to pick up Rogue Trader even for a little bit, like the tutorial ends well after you get to see Mort use the Melta gun, so you'll figure that out pretty fast.
Uh-huh. But yeah, I'll add that to the list for sure.
To backtrack a little bit, the Descent to Avernus campaign, honestly, some of my favorite experiences in that campaign. So I told you I was the robot disguised as a human butler.
Yeah.
Well, I was one of the only characters that wasn't playing an imprisoned person who was serving for their crimes. So I was basically their wrangler, and Jacob had set the campaign up to be sort of a mix of like, this is the Suicide Squad sent in to save Avernus, or sorry, mm-hmm. to save El Terrell from Avernus.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were 4 of us originally, and Jax had a character. We had an acquaintance named Matt who had a character, and then we had a third acquaintance. And everybody in this party, everybody in this group, save for Jax, worked at Logan's at the time. Mm-hmm. And Ellis was the last person. Ellis's character didn't care one way or the other. He was just there to vibe. Jax's character was super on board with my character's whole bit of, I am a human man, named Hugh Manning. Don't look any further into it. And Matt was at that stage of D&D where it's like, he's playing the game, and he's not really, like, he's kind of in tune with his character, but it's more of like a his character is him, not he is the character this time.
This is a board game, not a role-playing game phase.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. That was great. I'm sure it was a good experience for him, and it certainly added some character to the rest of the party. At some point, he was like, I feel it in my bones. You're not what you say you are. So, like, I had to roll deception and he had to roll perception. I don't remember what he rolled, but I just remember that I rolled a nat 20 and we were just honoring it. And he, I think he tried to stab me and I had to fake bleeding. And, and,
pull out a ketchup bottle.
Oh, dude, no, I think that was fully the bit. It's like, I was the Italian human butler because, like, he stabbed me and I bled, but it was, like, tomato sauce. And he's like, you bleed tomato sauce? I'm like, yes, I'm Italian. I'm Italian. And so, like, it just kept getting brought up. It was all like, I don't trust you, tomato man. It's like, you've made that explicitly clear.
I like how Italy has somehow made its way into this fantasy world of yours.
Look, sometimes that happens. Like, if one of your players is playing a board game while you're role-playing, sometimes Italy appears.
Italy appears.
Italy is forever.
Could you be convinced to try, like, another avenue of role-playing?
Possibly. I won't say I'm not open to it. I like trying new things every once in a while, and sometimes new things are exactly what I'm looking for at any given point.
All right, let me give you some examples. What about LARPing?
I'm not opposed to LARPing, but at the same time, I feel like there's like a couple different avenues you can go down with LARPing, right? One of them is just dressing up and going to like a Ren Faire or like an event, and you like pretend to be a character, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's full-on like action LARPing, where you and a group of people basically act out D&D full costume in like a park or something. Yeah. I can't really say either of those sounds like it's for me.
Yeah.
But I do think those are both really interesting.
Yeah. There's I was talking to one of my guests I was on. They do a lot of international LARPing. She lives up in Spain. And she showed me pictures of her like in an outfit with a bunch of other Mad Max looking characters, and they're like they're all holding on top of this car while it's driving down a little area surrounded by just all these other Mad Max characters.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun, just to be out and driving and such. I'm sure the costumes add a lot to it too for them.
Yeah, like, okay, I'll be honest, like, if it's just like me and like three other people, I think I would feel a little silly. But like, if it's like me and like there's a whole slew of fucking people, then I'm like, dude, that's my jam. I like a lot of people. I don't know why.
I'm not huge into costumes, but that's not because I don't like them, but it's because I don't really find myself devoting a lot of time to what would be necessary to prepare a costume. And so like that keeps me away from it a little bit.
Yeah, so I guess cosplay would be out the door then.
Well, not completely. I like the idea of simple cosplaying rather than make an elaborate and well-designed like costume. So, like the Reggie Rock costume that's just a bunch of cardboard boxes and a little bit of paint. Love that idea. Because it's like, you can tell it's Reggie Rock, but also look at that guy covered in cardboard boxes. How quaint.
Hell yeah. All right, well, what about MMO role-playing? Would you be able to role-play in an MMO?
I wouldn't, if I ever played an MMO, potentially. However, I personally don't like MMOs. I've just never been attached to them. Because, like, I've had less than stellar examples of people that play MMOs and the style of gameplay that most MMOs tend to have, like League of Legends, not the original Final Fantasy, but I think 14 and 15 were the were the ones that were MMOs.
14's the Final Fantasy one, and then it was 11.
So like the examples I've been given have made me shy away from MMOs. So I just tend to not bother with them.
I get you. I can totally understand that. Like, and you could avoid like actually playing the game and just role played in the MMO, but at the same time, you still have to deal with like the individual communities and shit like that. Like, role playing in an MMO is a little bit different, I think, than role playing in like a LARPing setting or like a tabletop settings.
On the topic of MMOs, I feel like if I had been introduced to Wizard 101 or Pirate 101 later in my life, I might have been big into those, because those were certainly interesting concepts, if not, you know, heavily reliant on paid content at the beginning of their life cycle. I've seen videos on people doing either a playthrough of either one of those two games, and I just look at it and I go, maybe that would have been for me had I come across it a little later.
A little later. What about VR roleplay? Could you do that?
Well, the issue on that end is not an aversion to it per my personal opinion, but more a lack of resources. I have a VR headset with controllers. The issue is it's a little bit older and it has a specific adapter that I can't, for the life of me, find anywhere in my town, and I cannot bring myself to actually look for one on Amazon. It needs like a HDMI to video like C adapter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought about it more and more, and I looked at it, and I go, my computer probably can't handle running that anyways, so I guess I'm just screwed.
Oh, no.
So it's not for lack of trying. I did play a little bit of VR chat by borrowing a buddy's headset when I was like hanging out at his place.
Mm-hmm.
But that was less for role play and more for harassing people online, because that was funny.
Yeah, just so you go experience it. Wow, you were an awful person. Listen to you. I'm joking.
I mean, look, some people got really bent out of shape if you walked up to them dressed as a banana and said nothing but you're a banana and just pointed at them. They got really upset like that. It's hilarious how little tolerance some people have for, that's not what I'm trying to do here, go away.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, in like an MMO setting, like when people like come up and just start trying to troll the scene and stuff like that, we absolutely just block the person and move on. Like, we will just ignore them entirely.
You know, and I think that's the correct thing to do. If somebody's actively trying to make your experience worse, you should definitely stop interacting with them. And if they continue to ignore that you don't want to, then you should definitely like prevent them from interacting with you. My bit on VR chat was that most people on VR chat refuse to ignore people and absolutely have to argue with them until one of you leaves. And it's the inability to find peace with themselves.
Can they turn like other people down?
I don't know. It's been so long since I've played VR chat that I have no idea what it's like right now. But like back then, it was just a point and laugh kind of deal.
Like, have you GM'd at all?
I think I've attempted it once or twice, but it's never been my bread and butter.
I gotcha. Could you do a Star Wars really campaign?
Oh man, no, I don't think I've ever been a part of a Star Wars campaign, but it certainly seems like a fun idea. Then again, there's like so few like roles in the Star Wars universe that a lot of people really see, and I can't think of many myself. There's like, you're a rebel, you're an imperialist, or you're a Jedi. And that's like what a lot of people see, and I feel like it feels limiting when you're unused to it.
That was a weird roundabout way of me at like leading up to like another question I wanted to have to ask you. Like, do you prefer like one type of setting over another, or like, do you feel like you could just do whatever?
Well, I think I could probably do whatever, but I do think that I feel like fantasy settings really speak to me a little bit more than sci-fi settings.
Yeah, because like there's a lot of systems out there with like a lot of different settings. Like one of my personal favorite ones is one called Kids on Bikes. Have you heard about that setting?
I watched the Dimension 20 series of making fun of Harry Potter. Yes, I'm aware of Kids on Bikes.
I didn't know they did that, but yeah, I loved Kids on Bikes. And there's like a whole bunch of different systems out there. Like there's Animon Story, which is like a D&D one. I'm just naming a few off of my shelf. I have one called Cottages and Cerberus, which is more, Cottages and Cerberus, which is more like a cozy based tabletop role playing game. Like, could you see yourself doing those types of games?
I don't see myself suggesting them to other people just like off the top of my head, but I could. I feel like if somebody invited me to play, I'd be willing to try it out.
Yeah, because they're way different than. They're very much different from like Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder and that sort of stuff. Like Kids on Bikes and a few of these other ones are like more narrative experience. Cottage and Cerberus, while it does like have its combat mechanics, is more like narrative driven than anything else. It's one of my favorite stuff.
Oh, speaking of Kids on Bikes, you mentioned you hadn't seen the series that Dimension 20 made poking fun at the Harry Potter world. That was probably, I think that was their first use of the Kids on Bike system. And then I think they had a couple different ones where they either used actual Kids on Bike system or like they made their own version. They used that as a baseline. They had a series called Never Stop Blowing Up, which was supposed to be a narrative driven Kids on Bikes based action movie. Basically, like six characters were all workers at like a mall-based video store, and a mysterious old man had rented out a movie for like 20, 30, 40 years and owed like $2,000 in fees for like one movie. And they get the guy comes in, it's like, hey, I heard you were closing down. I came to return this video, right? And they get sucked into it. They get sucked into the movie. And the main premise, without telling a bunch of like post 20 minutes like spoilers, is that the system itself was based on Kids on Bikes, but had a so everybody had certain stats, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kids on Bikes. But Kids on Bikes has the explosion system, right? Where like you roll the highest number on your die, you get to roll your die again.
In most of the
campaigns they ran with a quote unquote Kids on Bike system, they had the critical success of a die. Whereas, let's say you're rolling a D4, if you roll a 4 on that die, you get to roll that die again and add the total. And specifically in Never Stop Blowing Up, they had a special explosion system. So let's say you had a stat that you needed to roll a D4 for. Mm-hmm. Well, you roll that D4 and you roll a 4. Not only do you get to roll an additional die for that check, that die increases from a D4 to a D6 permanently. And that went all the way up to a D20. And when you got a die to a 20, you had the choice to... I can't remember if the choice was explicitly to start your track back over or to like, I think you could like keep the 20 or you could start the track over at a D4 and you could use like a prestige system almost. You got to like get an item for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, because obviously it's a series, it's produced, they have some additional things. At the end of they had like a point system, like awarded points for interesting things they did that weren't expected, or like they played their character so well, or I think specifically they beat a check by like 12 or more or something, and they got these additional points. And they can either spend those to increase their odds of succeeding a check. But if they had some left over at the end of an episode, they got to like turn them in for extra special abilities. And by the end of the series, they had unlocked an ability that had led it to where anybody who rolled a nat 20 on a d20 for a check got to replace Brennan as the DM for like a full minute. And that led to shenanigans across the board. I think every single character rolled one nat 20 apiece. Except for, I think, Jacob Waisaki. I think he rolled two. But it was chaos whenever a character got to do something.
That's pretty fun. I'll have to give that a look.
But there are certainly a lot of interesting techniques and systems used to play role-playing games. I personally, I like to stick to what I know, which is why I so very rarely venture out. I really do appreciate the Dungeons & Dragons, the 5e system. And I think I like 1D&D to a degree. There are a couple of changes that I feel like they were made because they felt like they needed to make changes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there were plenty of changes that didn't happen. And rather than, instead of reprinting them, keeping them the same in a new book, they just didn't print any change at all and said continue using the old version.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt odd to me that they would, you know, they made a new edition of Dungeons & Dragons, but they weren't motivated enough to fully change over.
Right.
1D&D feels less like a 6th edition or a new edition and more like an addendum to 5th edition, like a 5.5e almost. And it really hurts to look at that, and because you can tell like how lazy it feels. As an example, in 1D&D, most if not all classes now get an origin feat, which is like a mini feat when they are level 1 based on their background. Or not really based on their background per se, but like from their background. So like everybody starts with a feat. And obviously it's not to the same degree as like a feat you'd get at 4th level in regular 5e. But like they looked at it and they're like, there are a few of them. So they've changed a bunch of like the basic feats that like everybody took, right? So like there are like 5-6 feats that like will automatically come to like most people's mind when they go, what's one of the best feats in the game? And somebody will say the alert feat because you get a +5 to initiative and you can't ever be prized. Well, they changed alert. So now it's like a +2 to your initiative, or you get to swap initiatives with a friendly player, but like you both need to agree to it. And like 9 times out of 10, that's just not necessary. And in fact, you're less incentivized to do so.
Mm.
Especially in the case where like you have the bonus to initiative, most of the time you will be the first player. So like, even if you wanted to go after somebody, you just say, hey, I hold my action. And there were a couple other changes as well, but like it just felt so disappointing to look at 1D&D and go, this could have been its own edition, or you could have just admitted that it's an addendum to the current edition rather than a new thing.
Wizards has been doing some shenanigans lately, and
Wizards has been less than successful.
Stellar, yeah. What is your favorite character? Not your favorite character, but like what is your favorite classes in D&D right now?
That's a great question. And it typically, for me, it depends on how I'm experiencing D&D. For example, when I play Baldur's Gate, I almost always default to like the Warlock.
Yeah, because me too, like, for some fucking reason.
Well, it's because Warlock is so versatile in its... Like, I say versatile, I don't mean that in a there are so many options that are all good. It's more that, like, the option that you always pick tends to just be so good in all these different situations. Like, if you sit there and you're like, I have Eldritch Blast, I can do it within 5 feet of me, or I can do it 300 feet out. It pushes people 10 feet, it deals an extra amount of damage equal to my charisma modifier. I have like 16 bolts of this stuff. You're screwed. And it's like, yeah, that pretty much solves almost every problem in Baldur's Gate 3. And that's if you don't play Ranger, at which point there are no problems in Baldur's Gate 3. There are only how many times in a round can you shoot somebody with a hand crossbow?
Yeah, I will die on the hill of this is a bad take probably, but I will die on the hill that Lockedon is the best class combination in the entire game.
You can have that hill all you want, because I know deep in my soul that it's actually assassin. It's what is it? It's thief rogue, and then like as soon as you get thief rogue, you stop being an assassin, or like stop being a rogue, and you immediately class into ranger, and then you just hand crossbows. There's not a single enemy in that game that I haven't seen get melted by base edition, like no mods, fully like full vanilla, just hand crossbows on a rogue ranger subclass.
Yeah, I did something with crossbows with hand crossbows at one point. It was a lot of fun. I will admit it was a lot of fun.
Before I go on to this tangent, let me finish answering your question. Like I said, when I play Baldur's Gate 3, I tend to almost always instantly go for Warlock. Not only because it's so versatile and it's one thing that it does really well, but also that like a lot of the good equipment for a Warlock, or at least there's a lot of good early game equipment rather than all the good equipment is early game. But there's a lot of good early game equipment to get for a Warlock. But when I play like physical D&D, when I'm with people, my first class was Barbarian. But like out of all the classes I've played, I can't bother Warlock in like... I've tried playing Warlock on paper, and I just can't jive with it. Mm-hmm. I've tried Ranger on paper and it seemed interesting, but then you get locked into that whole I'm gonna shoot a bow once a turn and then I'm gonna wait. And that's not all Rangers, admittedly. There are a number of different subclasses and builds that don't do that, but like what really spoke to me is a Paladin. But not like I'm going to sacrifice everything to be able to hit one thing for like 70 damage. More of the, I'm going to stand in front and everybody's going to look at me and I'm going to go get this guy, jump his ass. And the dude just has to look at me for fear of his life because I'm sat there and he can't hit me, but I can hit him and everybody else is going to hit him and he's just going to get jumped. I love sitting there with like a 20 AC, so and you can't escape. I'm here, you're back. Here, and that's how it's gonna stay. I have to stop myself from taking Sentinel because I realized its full potential when I was doing that Warhammer campaign. We walked up to a mildly important enemy. I say we, like two or three of us walked into a room with that enemy. I got into lockstep with them, and they were like, oh, I can't hit you, and they tried to walk away to hit somebody else, and I'm like,
Sentinel attack, your movement speed is zero, you can't go anywhere.
And I think what really hurt it was not the idea that they couldn't fight any, it was less that I had Sentinel and more that I had Sentinel, I had high AC, and my partners both had ranged base attacks, so like fights were difficult for Jacob to plan. Because like he had one idea and he couldn't do it because the first time he tried it, they got locked into melee combat with somebody they couldn't hit while two other people peppered her with shots from like 30 feet out.
Paladin has a way of making you feel certain things.
I do love Paladin. So much fun.
If you don't mind, one of the last things I like to ask the people who come on the show is if you happen to have any advice for any potential role players out there, what would that be?
Don't feel like you have to play a certain way when you're role playing, because one thing I feel like I didn't understand is that when you're role playing, you don't have to play a role. Sometimes the role you're playing is just just you. And there's nothing wrong with that. You just gotta feel your way around a space and find where you fit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there's like different modems of role playing. You got the theater of the mind, and people take that theater a little bit differently from person to person. You just gotta, like Liza just said, figure out where you sit at in that theater.
For sure. Like, I talked about it a couple different times. There are people, like I used to be, where, like, you're not a person imagining themselves as a character. You're a person imagining themselves in a situation with different abilities. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's just one of the different ways to play. And sometimes that changes with practice and repetition. And sometimes it's good to go back to that, right? You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't need to be a different person. Sometimes you should just be yourself.
Yeah. All right, Elijah. Well, thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate you.
Well, thanks for having me on. It was a really good experience. Glad to talk to you and share my thoughts with your audience.